Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at avoiding injury and with those summer activities, trying to keep a comfortable level with your body and also on these trips, you know, comfortable trips. Getting in the plane, sitting in a plane for a long period of time, that can be not so much fun either, but there are things that we can do to get around some of those associated problems. Bill Boisenall, Associate Professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, one of our guests, the other Lori Tyne Brody, Physical Therapist, Athletic Trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center, our two regular guests back once again. And certainly if you have questions or comments as we move along today, join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show and you can post a question or a comment there. Lori, good to see you.
It's good to be here on a beautiful day.
Bill, you're looking...
It is a beautiful day.
Yeah.
Good to be back.
Yeah, great to have you back.
Excellent.
I will be doing a lot of flying here in the next month or so. I'll be in England in July and... I'll be in Canada next week, actually playing in a golf tournament next week in Saskatchewan.
We could do the show from London, don't you think?
I think that would be fantastic. That way we could fly and we could figure out
just how
and how to position yourself in your seat to keep your back from hurting and your feet from falling asleep. And unfortunately, we can't do anything about the crying child behind you the misbehaving children in the back seat on your long car trips.
Right.
We'll leave those things to the parents.
That's right.
There are some things that we can kind of do, aren't there? Whether it be in the car or in the plane?
Well, in both. And, on the plane, it's kind of twofold. One relates to luggage. Now, the airlines have made it a little easier for us since you can bring virtually nothing on board anymore that fits in the overhead baggage area. But people lifting their luggage in the plane... I see some people that are just really struggling. It's too heavy for them. It's awkward. It's crowded. And also getting luggage on and off the conveyor belt. It's awkward. And, you know, the conveyor belt, I always try to show people, demonstrate to people, use your legs, bend your knees, don't reach over and grab that luggage as it's moving with your knees straight. It's a lot of pressure in that low back area. So if you bend your knees, you can use your legs a little bit more. And inside the plane, trying to get an overhead compartment is, again, using your legs as much as you can. And obviously, if you can't do it easily, see if you can get somebody to help you. In terms of the sitting, you know, the seats pretty much force you to sit in a nice C curve, which isn't very friendly to the neck or the low back.
I don't know who ever designed plane seats. They've never looked at a spine.
Exactly. typically you can get little pillows.
Yeah.
And so if you stuff that in the small of your back, that can add a little support. But if you lean the back of the seat backward, then in order for that pillow to really help you, you need your feet up on something. So if you have a carry-on you can put underneath the seat in front of you, if you can rest your feet on top of that, pillow behind your back, it kind of simulates a recliner.
Mm-hmm.
But on long flights greater than a couple hours, if you can get up and walk around and move around, and of course they tell you to wiggle your toes and pump your ankles for blood clots and things like that too.
Yeah, I was thinking about getting the bags off the car off the carousel. I have an odd one is the golf bag. You know,
yes.
And they're different. Getting those off is a little bit different from the normal suitcase, just because of their nature of what they look like.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. It is awkward, and you know, quite a bit of luggage has a handle on the top and the side. And ideally, if you can grab both, again with your knees bent, and you can really kind of pivot through your legs. That's the best, but it's awkward.
It is, and take your time is another piece of advice. And people are always in a hurry. They want to get their stuff out of the way so they're not in other people's way. They're having to move in an awkward way so they don't hit the person next to them with their luggage.
Right.
You know, if you need to take a little bit more time and let people clear out so you can take your time and get your bag, it'll be worth it in the long run because you spent a lot of money on your vacation. You don't want to start off with a bad back before you ever leave the airport.
Yeah.
Callers online to visit with you, too, so and also some emails. Let's go to the phones. Maureen and Ripon, your turn. Hi, Maureen.
Good morning. I wish I would have known this information. I had a trip to Alaska.
Oh.
No.
And it was a long flight.
No.
but enjoyable. My problem is this. 2 weeks ago, I like to mow our lawn with not a riding mower, but a half acre with a regular mower. I don't know what I did to my legs. They've been painful from the knees down, both of them. I do have osteoarthritis. I'm just wondering if I even have something more like PAD or something like that. I'm going to see my physician in June. But I'm just curious. I'm a walker. I am overweight. So maybe all those things and my age, 63, might contribute to everything.
Yeah.
But I love to walk, you know, and I can't understand this pain.
Yeah.
Where in your lower legs is
from
the pain?
From my knee down in the front, not so much in the back.
Okay. And is it constant? Are there things that make it worse? Do you notice it more in certain movements?
Yes. If I'm sitting and getting up, it's just very painful. When I'm walking, that kind of relieves it.
Okay.
So I have no clue. I have never been this way before. It's just weird because I do a lot of walking. So
yeah.
Right. You know, Marie, you mentioned about peripheral arterial disease. You mentioned PAD or vascular insufficiency.
Yes.
It doesn't sound like that from the standpoint that you get better with walking.
Yes.
If you have decreased blood flow, the oxygen, there's not enough oxygen to the muscles, and muscles start hurting the more they're used. So the fact you get better with walking would steer me away from that.
Okay.
The fact that you get it with sitting, and then when you get up out of the chair, it might be coming from your back. Have you had a history of back problems at all along the way?
Absolutely none.
Okay. All right. It sounds like you've been mowing this lawn for a long time. Was this your first venture out for the season, or have you been doing this a few times already?
Actually, it was the first venture out, and my husband had the handle set too low for me because he's so much taller.
Okay.
And, oh, my gosh, it was just a bad experience, but I was determined to finish.
Yes, I understand, because it keeps growing. And any numbness or tingling in the lower legs or feet?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, it's good to go in and see your physician when it's in both legs like that. And, you know, you mentioned the history that you have. But, again, what you're describing doesn't sound like peripheral arterial disease. It's probably unlikely it's your back. You could just be simply an overuse. It was too much at one time for those muscle groups.
Okay.
But you're going to see your physician. They'll check your pulses, and they'll do a neurological screen.
Okay.
This
was 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, typically if you have muscle pain from doing a new activity, it'll last 4 to 7 days.
Uh-huh.
So for it to still be there 2 weeks later makes you question whether or not it's just I did something new and my muscles are sore from it. So I think it's good you're going to see your doctor and get a good examination and figure out the source of that.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Good luck to you. And David in South Milwaukee, it is your turn. Hi, David.
Good morning. I did a switchblade dive the other day, and it would have been fine had it been into water.
Oh.
But it was on top of asphalt, and I landed on my forearms and my knees, and I thought for sure I'd re-injure my shoulder or my kneecaps or something. That didn't happen. But about a day later or so, the sternum pain. And it hurt to take a deep breath. I couldn't take a deep breath, but it was excruciating. If I ever had to laugh or cough or sneeze, and then when I laid down flat in bed, wow, scraped me off the ceiling. Anyway, I'm wondering three questions, one long one, maybe two shorties. First of all, what do you think might have happened there? It's getting better now a couple weeks later. And secondly, I'm wondering, I had to give up push-ups because I couldn't take the angle with my wrist. And I wonder if there is a method or a device that you might suggest for being able to do push-ups again. And then if also maybe you have an idea for upper body strength as far as doing pull-ups on a door jamb.
David, can I ask how old you are?
Yeah, I'm 59.
59, okay. Any history of osteoporosis, decreased bone density, anything like that?
Osteopenia.
Okay. All right. And the pain that you're experiencing, is it right in the center of your sternum? Is it just off the one side?
At first I thought it was right at the center, but it seems to, when I push right where the ribs connect to the sternum,
yeah,
that's where I notice it. It's very, very spotty. You know, it's not all over the place. It's just in that certain area.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, based on what you described, I mean, your history with osteopenia, decreased bone density, I mean, that, when you started describing the fall and the pain with a deep breath and cough and sneeze, I was wondering, you know, could you have a fractured rib? And but there are joints with the ribs attached to the sternum that also can be injured with trauma like that. How long ago was the fall again?
It was about 2.5 weeks ago, and it's improving now daily. At first, I was doing all kinds of things to test it and probably re-injuring it.
Yeah, I know. You're like the rest of it. We want to know if it's still there.
Yeah. testing.
You bet. Well, based on what you said in terms of where you poke and it's painful and the fact you're getting better, especially more recently, means it's probably not a fractured rib. But it's probably still a little too early to start doing push-ups or weightlifting until you can, you know, raise your arms up overhead without pain, where you can take a deep breath and probably sneeze and cough without pain. And I would wait till those things clear out before you start going back and trying your push-ups and any resisted exercise. And then once you reach that stage, you know, again, doing push-ups, I would maybe start with, what, half the number than you would normally do. Just make sure that goes okay. And then you can increase the repetitions to where you were back before.
The other thing that you can do is you can change the angle of the incline of the push-up so that you're not parallel to the ground and perpendicular to gravity. You can start with a wall push-up or a push-up to a chair where you're not quite so horizontal, and that'll decrease the resistance. And again, you don't have to go through the range. You can just do an isometric hold to strengthen, because sometimes it's the movement that irritates the joints, not necessarily the muscle activation. And then there are also push-up blocks and things like that that you can use that change the grip of your hand placement, or towel rolls or foams or something like that underneath the heel of your hand to change the angle of your wrist as well.
What about those pull-ups?
Yeah, I think as you're able, something like that would be fine. And given what it sounds like your exercise program is, you know, you're probably lucky you weren't hurt worse in your fall, and probably your previous strengthening program was protective of you to some extent. So
yeah, and kind of the same principle, like Lori mentioned with the push-up, with the pull-up, you can just hang from the bar, and is that comfortable? And then you can do a partial pull-up, and if that goes well, then you can go on to doing a full pull-up again.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Thank you very much for calling, and good luck. We have an email from Chris in Onalaska who'd like your opinion on wearing braces, was ankle brace or knee brace as examples, for a person who's not injured that part. My 13-year-old daughter has been encouraged by a basketball coach to wear ankle braces as a preventive measure. She's not injured her ankle in any way, and I'm concerned if she were to wear a brace all the time, her ankles would become weak and more vulnerable.
What a great question.
Yeah.
Many coaches, especially at the higher level, encourage their players to wear ankle braces as a preventive measure. And there is research that shows that wearing the brace can decrease the incidence of injury during that activity. However, our philosophy is you don't get a brace without exercise. So anyone that goes into a brace gets specific, focused, directed ankle strengthening exercise. And that's going to be what keeps them safe when they take the brace off. So during activity, there's something about the tactile sensation of that brace on the skin and that snug feeling of that brace around the ankle that provides a little bit more proprioceptive input into those muscles that can protect the ankle from injury. But he's absolutely right that it can produce reliance on the brace and weakening of those muscles. So nobody gets a brace without a regular, ongoing, resistive exercise program.
Very good points. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question for our guest today as we talk about avoiding injuries and dealing with injuries, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault with us, Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. Amanda in Wanakee, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, I've been attempting to avoid injuries because I tend to receive injuries playing lots of sports. So I've been doing a sort of cross-training program. I have torn my ACLs, one partially and one fully that was reconstructed on my right knee. And this last Friday, I was hitting tennis balls around, and it started to feel weird on the inside and somewhat achy. So I stopped, but apparently it got a little worse or something because it hurts to go up and down stairs. It doesn't hurt to walk, and there's no catching, but I just started an exercise thing where I'm trying to get back in shape. I'm really upset about this and wondering how concerned I should be. I've had a lot of ankle sprains where if I continue to sort of work through it, they heal quickly and it's fine, but I don't know what to do in this case. And so, I'm just wondering how much exercise I can do.
So this is the knee you had the reconstruction on?
Correct.
And how long ago was your reconstruction? Approximately.
5 years.
Okay. And did you have a patellar tendon graft?
No, hamstring.
Hamstring, okay. Well, it sounds, again, like your kneecap. Is it feeling like it's right in front or like it's on the inside of your knee?
Right in the middle.
Right in the middle. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, one of the things that we commonly see, A, both in women, B, in tennis players, C, people have had their ACL reconstructed, kind of regardless of graft, but more so with patellar tendon grafts, is kneecap problems, patellofemoral pain. So it may be that in one of the side-to-side movement, if it's new to you, if you haven't done that for a while, it's just new to your kneecap. And you probably stirred up a little bit of soreness underneath there. So kneecap.
But it doesn't sound like a meniscal tear.
Does not sound like a meniscal tear. No, no, not unless you have a lot of swelling, clicking, catching, inability to fully extend, inability to fully flex. Those are signs of a meniscal tear. What you have sounds like a stirred up kneecap. That is rehabilitated with really good core glute strengthening, looking at your posture, quadricep strengthening, some flexibility. So, you know, given your history of problems with your knee and the kinds of things you want to do, it'd be reasonable to go back and see your PT with this new problem and get on the right track, especially if you want to get back into an exercise program for general health or weight loss or strengthening or whatever. Given your history, it'd be great to have some direction to keep you on the right path and injury free. But it does sound like a kneecap.
If I'm exercising in a way that there is no pain, since it's using the knee, is that still further irritating the kneecap?
No. You'll know it if you're irritating your kneecap.
So if I use pain as my guide, I'm good to go?
Yes. But that being said, I still want you to see somebody because I don't want you changing the way you do things and your movement patterns to avoid this injury because you could create a different one over time. I want you doing the right things in the right way using the right muscle groups.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Jim in Manitowoc. On to you now. Hi, Jim.
The last caller kind of answered my question anyways, but I was talking about the knee. Never had problems with my knees. I used to run a lot. I bike a lot, but I do I do cardio at the gym on a machine for about 50 minutes, really heavy. And I've just noticed that there's a little pain in my knee. Could that just be for me overdoing it, you think?
It could be. When you say heavy and what machine, what do you mean?
I do about 1,200 calories in 50 minutes. Arc Trainer, it's called. It's sort of like a up and down motion.
So is it more like an up and down or is it more like an elliptical?
Similar to elliptical, yes, you're right.
Okay. And when you say heavy, does it mean you're doing it fast or you're doing it with a lot of resistance?
I don't, very light resistance. I put it on level 3, which is the lowest level there is. I do it really...
Okay.
I like to run, you know, so I do about 3 miles, but I'm thinking I do it 4 days a week. Is that too much?
Well, the issue is you're using the same muscle groups and you're working the same joints and the same range of motion over and over and over again.
Okay.
So it is possible that it's too much of a single activity. So if you could find another activity that moves your legs in a different movement pattern with a different angle at your knee, then I think that would be better for your knee. Kneecaps, better for your knees in general.
Sooner or later, if you over push it, common sense will tell you something will happen, right?
Yeah, more or less.
More or less.
Uh-huh.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Email from Susan in Menominee Falls. I'm an avid gardener, as was my mother. Her knees are ruined from her gardening all those years. I'm wondering how best to protect my knees in the garden. Is it better for your knees to crouch or squat or kneel when performing garden tasks? I'm nearing retirement, expect to do a lot more gardening, want to be sure my knees are as safe as possible and pain-free as possible. I like those knee pads that you can gardeners can use.
Yep, you can try the knee pads. I mean, there are a few issues about that. Anytime you are squatting... Okay, you have a lot of compressive forces between your kneecap and the bones below it. So the more you bend your knee, the more load you're going to have in the back of your kneecap. It's going to make your kneecaps hurt. Similarly, if you kneel on your knees, you're kneeling on your kneecaps, and that hurts also. So the idea would be to incorporate some variety. If you're doing some kneeling, you can use the pads. The pads tend to help. So get some of those knee pads. A cushion isn't quite the same thing as the knee pads, so I prefer the knee pads over the cushion. Alternate that with some squatting, or you can do a half kneel where you kneel on one and the other one is bent, and then you switch those back and forth. And you can combine those things with a little stool where sometimes you sit, and then you intermix that with some standing activities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of all of those, squatting probably puts the most pressure. You know, the kneeling, as long as you have a knee pad of some sort, then you tend to be better. But the half kneeling is, because then you can switch from one side to another. So it's kind of like a lot of the information we provide, the more variety you can mix into the position, probably the better off you're going to be. But if you're going to kneel, then you want the knee pads.
And just like any other activity, when we talk about running, biking, swimming, cross-country skiing, gardening's the same way. You need to prepare yourself and train for it. You don't, garden for 30 minutes a day and then all of a sudden start gardening for 3 hours a day. You work your way up over time. So don't just jump into it the day after your retirement or you'll be calling the show again. but work your way into it slowly over time.
About a year ago, this is from Julie, Facebook question. My 64-year-old husband woke up with a very sore neck. It cracks and pops. There's numbness down his arm. The doctor says it could be a pinched nerve. There is arthritis in his neck. There is arthritis in his neck. What can we do to ease the pain?
Well, it's the arm pain that is most concerning. And if the pain is sharp and if there's any tingling numbness along with it, then that's a nerve talking, a nerve that has been stirred up. A couple things. Once a nerve gets irritated, it doesn't like to be stretched, whether it's sciatica or it's a nerve coming out of the neck. And so when there's quite a bit of arm discomfort, that arm needs to be supported. So when people are standing, I recommend they hook a thumb in a belt loop or put a hand in a pocket. When they're sitting, have that arm supported on a pillow or a duffel bag, a gym bag of some sort. And when they're lying down, even if they're lying on their back, they can have a pillow underneath that shoulder and that arm. And that just takes some of the tension off that nerve. Head neck posture is really important. When we kind of slump down into this forward head posture, that closes the space available for nerves. And then if you start turning or moving your head on top of that, it causes more irritation. So really want to be careful with posture. Sit up as straight as possible. Maybe using a lumbar support to help get the shoulders and head neck aligned better over the pelvis. If it's been going on for more than 3-4 weeks, 5 weeks, 2 weeks and it's not getting any better, then a visit in to see whether the primary care physician or if he's seen a PT in the past, because sometimes medication is needed to get people over the hump, but there are also some specific exercises to get the pain up out of that arm, and that's where it needs to start.
Sharon and Mosini, your turn. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I have a rather bizarre problem. My right thenar eminence just hurts excruciatingly. Now, I'm 63 years old. I'm very active. I do a lot of gardening, a lot of handwork gardening, and I do have osteoarthritis in both knees. So I kind of assumed it was just arthritic, because arthritis in the thumb goes hand in hand with the knee. But nothing that I do is helping it. I ice. I wear a brace at night when I'm sleeping. It's right in the fleshy pad, going down into my wrist on the lateral side. What can I do?
Oh, well, everything you described from the beginning sounds like pretty classic CMC arthritis in the thumb. It's very common to get arthritis in the joint where your thumb articulates with your wrist. So, pain in those muscles, could easily be overwork as those muscles are trying to protect that joint. It could also be a little De Quervain's, tenosynovitis. So I don't know if you've had that checked out, if that's a component of this. You have the thumb splint, so it makes me think you've seen somebody for this problem.
No, I haven't.
You haven't.
It really, really wrecks my golf game. So
right. Well, mm-hmm. you could step into the medical system at this point and get a little bit more direction. But aside from that, do you have ergonomic tools for your gardening?
Not overly ergonomic. I mean, they have a broader handle.
Mm-hmm. You might investigate those things if that's important to you. The splints certainly at night, or are you using the splints while you garden?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Because it really doesn't give me much ability to flex my wrist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it encompasses my thumb and then it goes down in over my wrist just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You
could consider seeing a hand specialist, and they may be able to direct you to some kinds of splints that you could wear that would allow a little bit more motion for the kinds of activities you want to, or direct you to tools that may be a better fit for your hand after they examine your hand. But it sounds like you've done a really outstanding job doing the things that you have access to. But you may need to move into the medical system at this point to get access to other things that you may not know about.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck. Thank you, Sharon, for calling. Karen in Cross Plains has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Karen.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about if I can do anything about fatiguing muscles in my thigh and calves when I'm just doing some light jogging. I like to take 30 to 60-minute walks about, 3, 4, 5 times a week. But I like to do a little bit of jogging, while I'm doing that, just for a minute or two, but my muscles get so tired. And after a minute or two, I stop, and it goes away. It doesn't last. I'm 63, and I do take a beta blocker. Is there anything that I can do to kind of alleviate that tired, fatigue, muscle feeling?
Yeah, Karen, it's a good question. Is it in both legs?
Yes.
Okay. And how long has this been going on?
Probably for a couple of years, actually. At first I thought, I'm just out of shape,
Right, right.
But it doesn't seem to go away, When I do the jogging, after a minute, it's like I feel like my legs are lead, and I just can't go on for like more than 2 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. And have you talked to your physician about this over the last couple of years?
No, not really. It's not something that usually I remember when I go in.
Right, right. No, I understand. I understand. Well, certainly there are ways to strengthen muscle groups, especially large muscle groups that we use with walking. Could it be related to why you're taking beta blockers? I mean, could it be something with the vascular system? Could it be something with the nervous system? And those are possibilities. I'd feel a lot better if you went in to see your physician specifically for this reason and let them know how long it's been going on and really how little jogging you can do. Mm-hmm. And the fact that then you have to stop. I mean, it does go away, which is obviously is a good thing, but how little jogging it takes, and just have them try to sort out why this is happening. Once that happens, then it'd be much easier to give you an appropriate exercise program.
Oh, okay.
But that would be the appropriate place to start with this.
Okay. Well, I can continue walking.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, there's no problem. It's just that the jogging, you know, after a minute or two, I just feel like I have to stop.
Yeah. Well, I would keep up with the walking, but I would still go in and see your physician. I mean,
oh, okay.
the fact you're walking 30 to 60 minutes and you're unable to jog more than a minute or two, I mean, it could be related to, again, the medication that you're on or why you're on the medication. But, again, the fact that it comes up with so little jogging, that makes me a little uneasy.
Oh, okay.
So get it checked.
Yep, that would be the best thing to do.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Karen. Tammy in Reedsburg, hello.
Hi. I turned 50 in January and was participating in like a boot camp training program a couple of hours a week, and this wasn't a problem. The problem is I, you know, lost a little weight, got stronger, and I was never too far from a good baseline strength. But then in March, I decided to play basketball with some friends, they asked me. And the next morning after I got out of bed, I was when my toes hit the ground, I was surprised at how much pain I had, and it worsened the next day. It got a little bit better, and 2 weeks later, I thought, okay, I'm going to do it again. And then I really went crazy with the rebounding because they said, wow, you're keeping right up with us. And
yeah.
And now it's been 8 weeks, and I have not done a thing because I am in a world of hurt. Oh. I have great range of motion, great flexibility. I'm surprised. I'm shocked that this happened to me. I have done nothing. I've gained 7 pounds.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. You're heading the wrong direction.
It scared the heck out of me because I hear people who have stepped off a curb and torn, you know, ruptured their Achilles.
Right, right. Well, if you have good flexibility, chances are you're not there. The people who rupture are people that have a lot of stiffness in their Achilles, in addition to the change in activity. So, you know, it was a change in activity. It's the landing from the jump that just kills your Achilles. So,
why didn't my body tell me at the time, hey, don't do this?
You know, because
the team needed you.
It's like this. You know, what you're doing is you're doing an eccentric muscle contraction. That's the lowering contraction. It's kind of like walking downhill. You don't notice how hard you're working until the next day when you actually cause quite a bit of damage in your muscles that takes a few days to recover from that. So that's why it doesn't happen. Plus your Achilles, believe it or not, doesn't have that many nerve endings. So here's the thing. You're really heading the wrong direction in a hurry. So you need to get in and see somebody so you can have some focused, directed intervention and get yourself better. That being said, in the meantime, here's what you need to do. You need to sit down, cross your ankle over your knee, take a hold of that Achilles and kind of squeeze it, and I want you to massage it. And it's gonna hurt like the dickens.
It is killing me.
Yep.
And I'm doing that every single day.
Yep, but just massage it, you know, as firmly as you can. Do some icing and do some eccentric contraction. So you're over the edge of a step. You go up with both feet, then lower yourself down with just one and do about 10 on one side and 10 on the other side.
I've been doing that.
Okay. Get in and see somebody because okay. it's not going to be an easy fix for you. And it's not going to go away on its own. I can assure you of that.
Yeah. I can't. It's been 8 weeks and I am no better when I get out of bed in the morning and I'm scared to death to try to start to run again.
Right. No, don't run.
Don't do it.
But you can be doing things like bicycling. You can swim. And you should be able to walk as long as you stay on a level, stay off the hills. If you stay on a level, like walking around a track or something.
Okay. I would think that walking uphill would be good for me to gently stretch it.
It's too much load. What you're doing is you're stretching with too much of an uncontrolled load. You can stretch gently against a wall or with your heel over a step in a controlled fashion. But what you're doing when you're walking uphill is you're stretching and then you're asking for a muscle contraction when that muscle is at its greatest length. And it puts a lot of load on it.
Would they possibly recommend ultrasound? Needless to say, I looked this up on the internet.
Well, you know, they might, but honestly, I wouldn't recommend it when your Achilles is that hot and inflamed. Mm. And when you're on it that much, it's a form of deep heat. And it can, you know, in the presence of an inflammation, it can go either direction. And in something like an Achilles or a patellar tendon, in my mind, it's too likely to take it the wrong direction. It's a risk-benefit ratio. The benefit you get from it, research hasn't upheld to warrant the risk.
There you go.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Tammy. Bill Boyson and Lurie Tyne Brody, our guest today, as we talk about avoiding injury, and then if you get an injury anyway, how to deal with it, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Dealing with aches and pains and sprains and strains today here on the Ideas Network with Bill Boisenault and Lurie Tyne Brody. Thanks for listening in. Questions? Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Facebook question from Irene, who says, I started having trouble with my knee when I was doing quite a bit of kneeling in my job a couple of years ago. Now I notice pain in my knee and sometimes both when I go up and down stairs part of the time. Should I be checking this out with a doctor? Do you think physical therapy could help?
Well, that's a pretty similar question to the gardening question of I'm going to be gardening when I retire very soon. So kneeling on your knees, a lot of pressure on your kneecaps. And the classic, there are a couple of classic symptoms of kneecap pain. One is pain going downstairs. And the second one, they call it the moviegoer sign, where after you've been sitting for a long time and you get up, then you have a lot of pain in the front of your knee and kneecap. So it sounds like she got the front of her kneecap stirred up, and physical therapy has lots to offer for that kind of a problem. They do an examination. They look at flexibility. If you're really inflexible in the backside, that puts more pressure on your kneecap. So they look at increasing flexibility there. They look at increasing the strength in the front of your leg and the front of your thigh and in your glutes and hips, because that helps control the posture of your kneecap. They sometimes look at mobilizing and moving your kneecap some. And then they also look all the way down at your feet to see if foot posture is affecting the alignment of your kneecap. You know, if you stand in front of the mirror with your barefoot and you kind of flatten your foot and then lift up your arch or tighten your butt muscles and relax your butt muscles, you'll see the alignment of your kneecap with your legs change. So that's what we look at to make sure that you have the right muscle activation patterns to keep your kneecap in the right alignment.
Yeah, and for that length of time, usually you find muscle imbalances like that that need to be addressed to really get rid of it.
Facebook question from Karen. Are there exercises I can do to alleviate pain from my tailbone? It hurts most when I'm sitting and I've not done anything to cause trauma. Best in the morning and when I'm moving around. Riding in the car for a long time is uncomfortable.
Yeah, exercises. There's some stretching exercises in the glutes, kind of the back of the hip, the glutes, that can stretch tissue that attaches to the tailbone.
Mm-hmm.
But usually if it's direct pressure, which is what I'm kind of assuming here, then keeping pressure off the tailbone is even better. There are pillows that you can buy that have a section cut out. And so the weight is through your sit bones and the pressure is off the tailbone. Usually what I had tried before I had people purchase something like that is take two hand towels and simply roll them up tight, put some tape around them, and then you sit on those with one under each sit bone.
Mm-hmm.
And if that makes sitting a lot more comfortable, then potentially getting a cushion. But there's time with stretching the back of the hip on both left and right side can take some pressure off that tailbone.
Gary in Eau Claire, hello.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Around the first of the year, I started noticing a very sharp pain in the bottom of my right heel with every step I took. And after about 8 weeks of thinking it was going to go away and urging by my wife to see someone, I went in to see a podiatrist who did an x-ray and found one thing, that there was a bone spur at the bottom of my heel. And it mentioned something about a similarity to a tennis elbow in my right foot. Gave me an orthotic, a generic orthotic, to put in my shoe and said if I didn't work or improve, come back in 3 weeks, which I did, and it didn't, because it didn't help. He gave me a shot of cortisone and sent me off and said, I said, well, what's the next thing? He says, well, if that doesn't work, you'd need to get fitted for specific orthotics, and the cortisone didn't help either. I then started seeing an acupuncturist, and now the pain has moved from the bottom of my heel to the outside of my right foot, and it basically is there with every step that I take. I've also seen a chiropractor, and actually he now fitted me with specific orthotics that I should be getting sometime this week. But I'm just wondering is two things. One is, if it's painful, should I be walking on it? My wife and I had started a walking program, and of course this has kind of put a big hamper in doing that. And so the first question would be, should I walk on it if it hurts, or should I not? And then secondly, is there anything else that you suggest doing to try and alleviate the pain?
Well, I guess the first question is, what's causing the pain? When the pain was underneath your heel, where underneath your heel was it? Is it back underneath the pad of your heel, or was it farther forward towards your arch?
It was probably, I'm trying to remember now, it was more kind of in the middle of the heel, I think, and maybe slightly towards the arch. But
okay. And it's the pain was the same all day long? It wasn't worse at any time of day?
It was basically when I would be walking on it, when I'd apply pressure to it.
Okay.
It was with every step. It was like I was stepping on a nail.
Okay. And you've had radiographs and things like that to rule out anything in your heel?
The only thing that I had done, the podiatrist did an x-ray.
Okay. All right. But truly, some people will have something embedded in their foot and not know it. They may have stepped on something, and sometimes there is something actually in there. You know, part of it is figuring out what the differential diagnosis is here.
Mm-hmm.
After it's been going on this long, and you change the way you walk, and you've tried orthotics and this and that, the pain that's moved now to the outside, I'm not sure if this is the same problem or if this is a new problem because of how you've been walking and the orthotic and so on and so forth. I'm not sure what he injected the cortisone into. Whatever he injected it into, I'm guessing that wasn't the problem because you didn't get better.
Right.
So
right.
I don't know what he injected. So I'm kind of operating in the dark here. But causes of heel pain, number one is plantar fasciitis, and that would be associated with the bone spur. Bone spur is a sign of plantar fasciitis. If he injected there at the insertion of the plantar fascia and he didn't get better, then plantar fasciitis was not the problem. You can also have little nerve entrapments in your heel. So you can have a little neuritis in your heel.
Okay.
That causes pain. You can also have deterioration or degeneration of the fat pad in your heel, which can cause heel pain. So the first thing is figuring out what the problem is and then treating it appropriately. So now you have this pain on the outside of your heel. That could be a tendinopathy. That's either primary or secondary. It could be something like tarsal tunnel syndrome that's developed. It's hard to say. So I think getting in and getting a more definitive diagnosis, I know you've seen the chiropractor and the podiatrist. I mean, see a physical therapist and have someone examine your gait. You can see an orthopedic physician who specializes in foot and ankle. okay. who could take a more definitive look at it. But when you start on the intervention side, if you don't have a good diagnosis at the beginning, you're kind of shooting at the dark through trial and error mm-hmm. on the intervention piece. So, you know, given that you've tried all these things and nothing's better, I'd kind of look for the more definitive diagnosis so you can match the intervention to it.
There you go. Good luck.
And Gary, in terms of the question about walking, we generally don't want people working through pain that's sharp in nature. So if it's just your foot gets a little achy, gets a little tight during or after the walk, then you're probably not damaging anything or irritating anything big time. But if you're still getting sharp pain when you're walking, then I would avoid walking for exercise until you get that under control.
And good luck. Thank you for calling. Guy in Oshkosh, on to you now. Hi, Guy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm 59 years old. I've been medically retired for about 16 years. 3 years ago, I've gotten pain in my hip, in my left hip, and I've been to about four or five different doctors. Finally, last year, a doctor did some x-rays and found out that it was a disc or whatever in my back. So he gave me a cortisone injection or whatever, and it helped for a few weeks, but then it came back. So I've just been dealing with it. Now, the last few months, every once in a while, I'd get a pain in the morning where I couldn't put no pressure on the leg, and I'd go away in about maybe an hour or so. And now, yesterday, when I woke up, I was not able to walk on my leg at all yesterday. So I ended up going to the hospital last night. They gave me some pain medication and stuff. And I'm waiting for the doctor to call me, whatever, this and that. But what I'm wondering now is they're telling me that it's the nerve endings. And what do they do for that? Will they, if it is just the nerves and that, will they do any type of surgery? And usually do they do any therapy then for that, for mm-hmm. shooting pains of that in my left side and my hip? Because it kind of varies a little bit. It's not really the spine, but it's in my hip. And they did hip x-rays, but there's nothing wrong with my hip.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question, Guy. And what's most telling for me, if they injected your back and the hip pain basically went away, even though temporarily, then it's coming from your back. It's unrelated to your hip. And, you know, I can't say it's rare to have leg pain without back pain when it's a nerve being irritated in the back, but it does happen at times. But that's most telling. So the injection is diagnostic in terms of where's the pain coming from. And in an ideal world, if you combine an injection along with rehabilitation, that tends to be your best bet. And then if that combination doesn't work, then you can ask either for an injection again, or that's when surgery would be discussed. But so the fact the injection took the pain away tells you the source. In terms of so ideally you have another injection that takes the pain away, and then you work with a therapist and see what transpires over the next 4 to 6 or maybe even 8 weeks. And then if you only get temporary relief, then going back and getting a surgical consult would be warranted. And the early morning, again, with certain types of disc problems is not necessarily unusual. We're all a little taller first thing in the morning. Mm-hmm. Our discs imbibe or soak up a little more fluid. And so if you have a disc bulge or disc herniation, it's actually more pressure out against the nerve when you first get up. And then over time, gravity and body weight tends to force some of that fluid out. So, again, what you describe is not an unusual situation or scenario for that kind of disc problem. Mm.
Good luck to you. Thank you, Guy, for calling. And Janet in Marshfield, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have been having problems with falling, mostly because I don't watch where I'm walking, looking at flowers instead. But every time I fall, I land square on my knees. And usually on my elbows. And they hurt, like, you know, you scrape the skin off completely, and they, when you look at them later, because there's no blood dripping through your pants, you know, the skin isn't even off, but my knees obviously hurt all the time. I was told not to put ice on them or heat, and just leave them and continue my walking program that I've been doing, I guess, so I can keep falling. I don't know. But I was wondering if there's some balance things I should be doing to try to prevent falling besides watching where my feet are going.
Yeah. Well, we got about a minute to 45 to...
Okay. You should get in and see somebody. I'm guessing if you're in Marshfield, that the Marshfield Clinic has, as part of their physical therapy department, a falls program. We have one here at UW. And what you do is you go in and you meet with the physical therapist. They do an evaluation to try to figure out the source of your balance problem. It could be in your muscles and the joints. It could be in your ear. It could be vision. But there are three different systems that control your balance, and they try to find the source of your biggest problem. And then they'll set you up on an exercise program to help you with that. And they'll help you develop some strategies for while you're out walking to help keep you safe. But, you know, in terms of protecting your knees and your elbows and your back and your shoulders and everything else, you know, wrist fractures, getting the balance piece handled is really important. They're very simple things you can do. Exercises at home with your eyes shut in a doorway, single leg standing, all kinds of things that you can do. There's a multitude of exercises. So I would say to give your clinic a call, ask them about a falls prevention program, and they should be able to direct you.
And thanks a lot for calling. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests, they'll be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking about avoiding injuries and summer activities with Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. Bill's an associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Regulars, they come by every month to talk with us, and certainly nice to have them along, and nice to have you listening in. Give us a call with your questions at 800-642-1234. Chris in Lake Geneva has a question for you, too, so let's go there. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
About 2 years ago, I broke my ankle. I busted the tibia, the fibia, and... a bone down there somewhere, and seven screws later, it was put back together again. I'm very active, bike. I'm in a lot of aerobic swimming, boot camp type stuff where I use fins. I guess what I'm wondering is there's days when I can, you know, it doesn't bother me, and then there's days like yesterday where I could barely walk. You know, I was limping around, and I'm wondering, could there be something going on in there that I should go see a doctor, or is this just part of the healing process?
Ooh. Well, do you notice any pattern to when you have pain? Is it after certain activities?
Well, you know, this weekend I was helping my husband cut shrubs, so I guess I was doing a lot of up and down on hills, and mm-hmm. then I went to the Muscadet Mushroom Festival, and we went up on Frank's Hill, and it was quite a big hill, you know,
that's
that we walked
hill.
Up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then I came back home, and of course I felt guilty going to this thing, so I helped him, you know, cut some more brush. Oh. And then it was yesterday where all of a sudden, you know, I could feel that I just, you know, was kind of limping around.
Yep. Do you typically have those painful days after your exercise program, like your boot camp stuff? Or?
Not as bad as yesterday, but okay. Yes, I do feel, you know, kind of a strangling pain type of thing. There is kind of a lump where the scar is.
Okay.
I'm assuming that's where some of the screws are.
Okay. And can you very quickly tell me how the fracture happened?
There's a place in Highland called Big Spring Park,
mm-hmm.
and I was taking pictures and decided to cross a creek that mm-hmm. had some boulders in it,
mm-hmm.
and the next thing I know, I stepped down, something felt funny, I looked up, and my foot was over on the right side of my leg, and so that's how I
okay.
did it, and so half a mile limpingly back to the car.
Oh.
And
okay.
I'm 63,
okay.
and I did ask the doctor if it had something to do with my bone density, And he gave me the impression that my bones were pretty good for a woman my age.
Yeah, it's probably not the bone. So anytime you have a fracture that's bad enough to require 7 screws, you take many years off your joint surfaces. So what you're probably feeling is the result of the damage to your joint surfaces and the alteration in your ankle biomechanics due to 7 screw fixation. So rather than having joint loads that are dispersed over a large area through a large range of motion, you probably have limited motion, and so the loads are placed in a smaller area. Anytime you're walking on uneven surfaces and you're moving in directions other than straightforward, like we move most of our days, you place additional loads on those joints. So I'm guessing the combination of dragging brush, walking on uneven ground, walking up and down hills are going to place the most loads on that ankle. You're going to have to watch those things because your ankle is probably 10 years older than any other joint. So just think about your ankle as being 73 and not 63 and treat it thusly. So you may need to keep a log, perhaps, of your training program and just say, okay, today I did this, and you might have workout ABC, however you want to keep track of it. And keep track of what your pain or stiffness level is on a 0 to 10 scale. Look for a pattern and then figure out how to modify your activities to bring some of that pain down, because you don't want all that stiffness. You don't want all that ache. You don't want to have to limp around on it, because that's a sign that you are really aging your ankle.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, Chris, the activities you're doing, the biking and the swimming for aerobics, is really a good thing for you to do, because what Lori just described, there's minimal stress on the joints in terms of you don't have the weight-bearing load. And it sounds like the things that are getting you in trouble is the repetitive weight bearing, especially with the heels, that stresses the ankle range of motion even more so. So the screws have done their job. It's not like they've stabilized the area, but the limited range of motion may be getting you in trouble with those kinds of activities.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Susie in Ridgefield, it is your turn. Hi.
Hi. Well, that was an interesting call to listen to. I broke 3 bones on the inside of my right ankle about a month and a half ago. I'm still not weight-bearing. I'm going to physical therapy twice a week, and I would just like to hear you talk a little bit about the next stage once I am weight-bearing, what I can expect in the recovery period, and what, besides following my therapy instructions religiously, I can do to heal as quickly as possible.
May I ask your age?
I'm 59.
Okay. So recovery, well, keeping your body weight down. Okay. There's things probably other than your physical therapist might tell you. They'll give you, hopefully good instructions. And when you have questions, take those questions to your physical therapist to answer. But in terms of the long-term health of your joint, you want as much mobility as possible so that loads can be dispersed over as large an area as possible. You want to maintain your motion so you can move through a full range. If you have limited range, then you transfer some of those loads to other joints, notably your knee, your hip and your ankle. So then you can start to have problems there. You want to keep your body weight down so that you don't place extra weight-bearing loads on your ankles. You want to include non-weight-bearing activities in your exercise regimen, as Bill just said, swimming, biking, or if you don't like to swim, you know, water aerobics or a water exercise class. You want to keep your leg muscles strong so that they are efficient shock absorbers for your ankle. You want to make sure you're wearing good shoes that have good shock absorption to take some of the shock loads off of your ankle. So that'd kind of be it in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks for calling. Cece and Toma, hello.
Hi, yes. I am in my late 50s, and I'm a runner, and I had surgery on my right foot about 6 or 7 years ago, and there I have a screw below my great toe, and I've noticed lately that that toe wants to move over and is kind of pushing into the next toe, and almost makes it feel like there's like my sock is bunching up. There's no pain involved in it or anything, but I'm kind of concerned about it, and I'm wondering if there's anything I can do to keep that toe from moving over.
Well, what did you have surgery for in the first place?
You know, I can't remember what it's called right now, but I had that bump on the side of my
Okay, so, all right, hallux valgus and the bunion?
The bunion, yeah.
Right, okay. So there's something about the mechanics of your foot and how you move that's causing you typically to roll off the that inside joint. In normal mechanics, you're supposed to land on the outside of your heel. The weight-bearing line crosses across your midfoot and comes out the end of your big toe. For people who have some a common biomechanical abnormality is instead of going out the end of your big toe, you roll off the inside of that joint where you get the bunion. So apparently that's what you were doing that led to the corrective surgery 6 to 7 years ago. My guess is that whatever was causing that problem hasn't been addressed because you're still doing it and it's causing your big toe again to drift towards your second one. So my advice would be to go back to your podiatrist, to a physical therapist, have someone examine your gait and your foot posture and your lower extremity posture and figure out why you're doing that, because that's why your big toe is drifting towards your next one.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you, Cece, for calling. And Leroy in northern Wisconsin, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a question. I've got a little knots in my biceps and also just below my on my chest also, and I'm assuming it's like a cyst or something, and I was wondering if you think that they could turn into cancer or
well it's I'm glad you called. Anytime we have lumps and bumps that weren't there before, we want to get concerned. How long have they been there, Leroy?
I'm sorry.
How long have you noticed these bumps?
About 18 months.
Okay.
They're real small, and I was just assuming they were cysts or something, you know.
Yeah. Well, most likely, or lipomas, little small fatty tumors that are not malignant, are also relatively common. But the fact they've been there for 18 months and they're in multiple places, I would go see your physician. Physician should be able to tell you very quickly, is it something to worry about or not? But, you know, the fact they've been there for 18 months, it'd be different. You told me they've been there for 30 years, I'd feel differently. But I'd go see your physician for a visit specifically to have them check these things out, and they'll be able to tell you what they are.
There you go. Good luck. Thanks, Leroy. Sharon in Eau Claire, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I've had a history of neck and upper back pain for probably 15, 18 years, and it ended in a frozen shoulder eventually, untreated on all of that. And but in 2003, I ended up with carpal tunnel surgery on both arms. About 5 years later or so, and I had the surgery done on both, ulnar neuropathy was diagnosed in the elbows, and now at this point, they're suggesting possible surgery to reroute the nerves in my arms. And what I'm wondering is if there are any therapies or should I be pursuing some other alternative? And I will add that this was due to very intensive use on the computer for a couple of jobs I had. And so I'm just wondering if there's, you know, I no longer do it as intensively. I've had to cut back on my hours and so forth, but is there any alternative to the surgery for the nerves?
Sharon, have you seen a physical therapist along the way?
Not for any of this, no.
Okay, all right.
I'm sorry, I should interrupt. Yes, for the neck and upper back pain, I went to a therapist there and combined it with chiropractic, and that is pretty much gone.
Okay, all right. All right, I'd recommend seeing a physical therapist and have them evaluate you. There's an examination, nerve gliding, neuromobility exercises. I'm sure with the scarring that you have from the carpal tunnel surgery and then now what you're describing with the ulnar nerve, if they can figure out why the irritation is happening. It could be related to your neck or the history of neck problems, upper back problems, but there's a way to assess the nerve's ability to glide through these areas in the limbs. We do the same thing for the legs, people with sciatica and numbness and tingling in their legs. And a therapist could tell you pretty quickly whether this was something that might be able to help you or not. But I would think, unless you have major pain and numbness and weakness, I would try the therapy first before you have the surgery.
Well, the pain and the numbness and the tingling and the burning is all there in the arms. But I don't That's about the extent of it. I don't have weakness. I've got very good grip yet.
Okay.
And do they think that is from pressure from your arms resting on something while you were doing the computer work, the ulnar nerve issue?
They haven't really said. I mean, I adjusted all of that, you know, to make it ergo-friendly.
So okay.
I did all of that, and at night I sleep with braces on the wrists and elbow pads, and I've heard on your show, now I will add pillows under the arms and that, but any time I, so many activities where I have to use my arms for any length of time, which I do, is very painful. It just ends up with sleep, a lot of sleepless nights.
Okay. And your sense is the carpal tunnel is separate from the elbow, the numbness and tingling or whatever. Has the carpal tunnel been handled since the surgery?
No, it has not. I'm just feeling it more. The wrists don't seem to bother me. And again, I have those, you know, sort of adjusted to keep those in alignment and so forth. But it's really more the elbows and the forearms that are bothering me.
Okay. I mean, because they reroute the nerve, particularly in baseball pitchers, when you have instability, when that ulnar nerve is, you know, slipping around and you get that zing, you know, it can become entrapped. But, you know, I'm not sure what they're going to do for the surgery, if they're going to release it, if they think it's entrapped. But, you know, anytime they go in with surgery, then they create more scar. So I think Bill's right that it would make sense to try some of the neural gliding things if you're not getting frank instability of the nerve,
right.
And see if you get any symptomatic relief from that. Because I'd hate to see you have another surgery that didn't work, like the carpal tunnel. It makes you stop and think, well, are they looking at the right problem? Are they looking far enough up the kinetic chain, particularly since your carpal tunnel didn't help that much, and the outcome of this kind of surgery is less predictable, I think, than carpal tunnel surgery.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, and Sharon, I would find a physical therapist who probably specializes in spine with your history of the neck and upper back, even though that feels better, and then they can do this testing for adverse neural tension. And there's some easy range of motion and flexibility tests to do that would help give them some guidance.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Sharon. We had a 59-year-old male caller who had intermittent back pain, wondering if you folks think an inversion table would be helpful.
Yeah, that's been around for a long time, kind of hanging upside down or semi-upside down. And the premise is you unload the spine, take the compressive loading off the spine, and that can be of some benefit to people. When that first came out, there were folks that got into trouble who had blood pressure problems and certain eye problems. So before you want to purchase one or start using one, without any guidance, just make sure that your physician clears you for those things. But the idea of unweighting the spine has some good principles behind it.
Okay.
So it's,
right.
If you got access to one, as long as your blood pressure is not an issue and you have no eye problems, then you can give it a shot.
Facebook question from Jamie. I'm having pains in my right knee only when I have been sitting with it folded up for a while. After I take a few steps, it works itself out. Wondering if it's something I need to have checked into further before I have real issue, or if it is sounding more like an IT band tightness, and if so, what else can I do to stretch it?
It sounds a little bit more like patellofemoral. It'd be more likely some of the things that we talked about earlier, because when you have your leg tucked up underneath you, tremendous pressure underneath your kneecap, particularly if you've been sitting there for a long period of time. It kind of be like taking your finger and bending it backwards for a long period of time, and after a while it's going to hurt. So you put tremendous compressive forces underneath your kneecap, and your kneecap just doesn't like that. So for the most part, it's an unhealthy position to be in for a long period of time. I don't think it's anything that's going to require a physician visit, but I'd probably avoid sitting like that for long periods of time. It's not good for your joints.
Ann emailed us from Platteville, says, I've noticed that when I'm practicing yoga, my arms get fatigued very quickly when they're held out or up in the warrior poses. If I try to hold my arms out straight for over a minute, my hands go numb and get very warm. Why is that trouble working over my head and get lightheaded when I do so? My guess is that I need to strengthen my shoulders. Do you have any advice on how I should go about it, or is there something else I should be considering?
Well, strengthening the shoulders, upper back, core strength. Core strengthening can make a difference in our endurance, whether we're lifting something or holding our arms out. The lightheadedness, that can relate to head and neck position, related to blood pressure. Based on what we have here, I would maybe give your primary care physician a phone call. If you haven't had a physical for a while, go in for a physical and specifically mention these items. And if your medical doctor gives you a clean bill of health, then probably what you need is more upper and core strengthening and upper body strengthening to increase the endurance.
Doris in Shawano County emailed us, is it possible or impossible to strengthen muscles so my belly isn't embarrassing? I'm 89 years old, 5 feet tall, 105 pounds. I'm active gardener, but still have hunched back and corresponding protruding belly. It's complicated by bloating from male milk lactose intolerance and the healthy, high-fiber foods I eat. I'm a big eater. Carefully.
Well, certainly there's strengthening exercises you can do for your lower abdomen. The hunchback doesn't help much, so working on strengthening the things in her upper back so she stands up straighter, stretching the things in front, and then, actively using her muscles to pull her belly up, kind of like she's zipping her zipper up and tucking her tail under, and practicing that whenever she stands. It's easy to get into a posture where you just kind of hang on the ligaments of your spine, but you really have to use your muscles actively to hold yourself up into a good posture. And if you do that repeatedly, that will help.
Mm-hmm. And a travel suggestion from Carla and Nina. Regarding lumbar support on a plane, I use a gallon-sized Ziploc bag, which can be customized as you wish with the amount of air you prefer. It's awfully portable and it works great.
That's right.
A pretty good idea.
Weighs nothing. It is a great idea.
It is a great idea.
You can kind of make it the right size or thickness for you.
Thanks.
Quick, Karen, do you have a quick question for us from Madison?
Yes, I do. Thank you. I'm 64 years old. I was treated for 10 days with an antibiotic December 1st for Lyme disease. And everything went away. I was fine. And then around February 1st, I started getting a very arthritic, painful hip all the way down to my knee area, keeping me awake at night. I can't lay on it. At first I thought, I'm just 64 and getting arthritis. But then I realized, that Lyme disease sometimes I hear has some side effects. So I looked it up and there is such a thing called Lyme arthritis. And I'm wondering if there's any way that I can tell what type of arthritis this might have.
And what to do about it, yeah.
I'd probably go back to my primary care physician and get my joint evaluated. It is unusual that it would show up in that kind of time frame, show up that quickly and that severely in a single joint without any known etiology. No fall, no twist, no increased activity. So I'd go back to my primary care with that concern and have it looked at.
And thank you very much for calling. And Bill and Lori, thank you. Time flew again.
It always does.
It does. Yes.
Well, they will be back in a month, and we will talk with them again. Bill, associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Lori Tanbrody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Great to have them with us, and they will be back in a month. We'll do this all over again. Just looking ahead, tomorrow at 11, we're going to replay a great program. Author Mitch Zukoff shares an incredible story in his book, Lost in Shangri-La, a true story of survival, adventure, and the most incredible rescue mission of World War II. It's a great story. At 11:45, I hope you'll tune in for a rebroadcast of a fun segment about raising chickens. Susan Troller and Sue Medeiros are the author and illustrator of Cluck, From Jungle Fowl to City Chicks. So that's at 11:45 tomorrow. Then on Wednesday, Judith's with you, and she'll be back live talking about beekeeping and also about reptiles and amphibians. Thanks for listening. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.